You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Why We Watch, the show for fans, bar fans, about fans. I am Mags, and with me today is someone who should have been on this show a long, long time ago, but life and time zones just kept kicking us in the dick. The guy, just a wildfire in the wrestling content creation game. The guy, he writes, blogs, he podcasts, he does everything, and I'm actually jealous of him because he's so super, super talented. I'm speaking today with Wrestling Reverb's very own Kevin Carroll. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Mags. I'm very good. This is a show that we've been wanting to do for a long time.
Hell yeah.
And here it is. It's finally coming to fruition. I hope I rise to the occasion.
You most certainly will, I have no doubt. But the good thing about this show is it's so many varied stories that you get, so many like kind of different pathways people have had to get into wrestling. And it's interesting how we all got to the same point of creating content and just enjoying wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's story is different. That's what makes the show so good. And I've loved listening to so many people that I've known through Twitter, you know, I've gotten to be friends with, but you never know how they get into wrestling. You never really know, you know, why they've gotten into wrestling until they come on this show and you get to the bottom of it so expertly.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm just happy to be in a long line of really, really good guests. Hopefully I'm a good guest. Maybe I don't know.
You are an exceptional guest. Never fear. So let's get into your story. Let's find out why you watch this wacky sport of people pretending to fight whilst dressed in lycra. Why We Watch is proud to be working with Powerslam.tv. You can use our code MAGS to get yourself a 30-day free trial and watch up to 4,000 hours of quality independent wrestling content. Just make sure you sign up with your laptop for the code to work, and then after that you can download the Android app or the App Store app and watch this amazing content from Powerslam.tv.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Kevin, what was your first ever experience or your first ever memory of the world of professional wrestling?
Okay, so I'm going to take you back, because before I even started watching wrestling, I was a young boy. Of 4 or 5, so roughly around 2000-2001, and I was not aware of wrestling. This was, you know, peak Attitude Era, and I was too young to really be watching that. But my mother, or my father, I guess you don't really know, Santa Claus, got me a toy wrestling ring for either my birthday or Christmas or some arbitrary holiday. And obviously with the ring comes the superstars, comes the action figures. I had the entire set. I had Stone Cold, I had The Rock, I had Kane, Taker, I had all of DX. I had a pretty nifty collection. But there was one man that I put above all. He was a multi-time Kevin's Bedroom champion, and that was the Big Boss Man. The Big Boss Man was my favorite action figure because he was literally a cop. He dressed like a cop. And I was like, that's cool. That's different. It's interesting. As a young boy, you know, you're taken in, you're entranced by all the costumes. That's why I was drawn to Kane as well, because, you know, everyone else looked kind of normal, and Kane had this mask on, this cool red and black gear. But the Big Boss Man was tops for me. And he was the guy that, you know, he beat Stone Cold Steve Austin in the middle of that ring so many times that I was convinced that he was probably the greatest wrestler of all time. Little did I know that he wasn't. Yeah, he was a big name, wasn't a world champion, wasn't like huge in the grand scheme of things. But to me, as a little kid, he was everything. You know, he was the guy. He was my guy, Big Boss Man. And he'll always hold a special place in my heart. God rest his soul.
Wow. Of all the people that have been mentioned as like people's first favorite wrestler, I don't think anyone's ever really mentioned the Boss Man. But yeah, I can see it. I can see it, especially as of being a kid, so young, and you kind of look up to these kind of characters almost. I can see it. I always enjoyed the Boss Man's work. Interesting. Really interesting.
That's the thing. The thing is, like, yeah, I didn't know what these guys were saying on TV. I didn't know what they were doing on TV. So all I had to go off of was the action figure in my own head. Mm-hmm. So that's why I gravitated toward like Boss Man and Kane, because they looked so different. Yeah, he had Stone Cold. But he looked pretty generic, honestly. A bald guy, yeah. Black tights, boots, The Rock, same thing. Sort of, you know, black tights. Didn't really. He had sunglasses, but, you know, he wasn't. You know, he didn't jump out at me. And when I, you know, when I wasn't actively watching the program, I was just playing with the action figures. Just those sort of guys are the ones that jumped out as, you know, character driven talent rather than, you know, mic skills or wrestling skills, just purely based on look.
Yeah. So when is the first time that you remember actually watching wrestling and getting kind of invested in the content?
It took a while. I stopped playing with the action figures at sometime down the line, but for some reason it took me a couple years to make the next logical step, which was actually watching wrestling. Mm-hmm. I remember it very vividly, though. It was 2006, or no, it was late 2005, I think. I don't know. It was definitely 2006, because it was after it was sometime in between the Rumble and WrestleMania, because Rey Mysterio was hot then. Mm-hmm. And I was going over to a friend's house to play. You know, I was 10 years old. So that's what you say. You say, hey, can I come over? And I went over to my buddy's house, and it was a Friday night, and SmackDown was on. He was a wrestling fan. And it's funny now because this kid hates wrestling now, and he'll swear he never liked it. And I'm like, oh, I remember, buddy. But I went over there, and he's like, yeah, let's watch SmackDown. I'm like, what's SmackDown? He's like, it's wrestling. I'm like, oh, okay. And I sort of remember the action figures I used to play with. I'm like, oh, I wonder if any of those guys are still around. They weren't, except Triple H. But he was on Raw at the time, so I didn't get to see him. And the first match of the show, and I'll never forget this, was supposed to be Rey Mysterio versus Sylvester Turkai.
Wow.
But Sylvester Turkai, being a heel, had Elijah Burke step in for him. And it was a throwaway match in an episode of SmackDown. It wasn't anything crazy, but like Rey Mysterio, man. It took me about 5 minutes to realize this guy is my favorite wrestler. Mm-hmm. He was so goddamn good. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I realize this is actually late. This was later on in 2006 because he was still hot. But I remember the main event of this show, and the main event angle didn't feature him, and it featured other guys. And it makes me maybe this is later in 2006. I'm trying to get the timeline right. It's, you know, all a blur. But the main event of this show was a six-man tag between Cena, who was loaned from Raw. It was Cena, Batista, and Bobby Lashley versus Booker to King Booker, William Regal, and Dave Finley, the King's Court. And God, did I hate those guys. I just, especially Booker. King Booker was so hateable. And I remember just being caught up in it. I remember, you know, something we take for granted now, the hot tag, you know, the babyface in peril making that tag. And it was Cena. And Cena tagged in Batista. And I'm like, oh, my God, is Cena going to get to the corner? Like, he's got to tag in one of his friends. He's got to tag in one of the other guys because he's getting beat up. And when he made that tag, I remember just, like, being lifted off my feet. I was so excited. And, you know, Dave Batista is my second favorite wrestler of all time, Rey Mysterio. And he just cleaned house. Just took everyone to school. They won the match. The baby faces won the match. And I remember just being exhilarated. Like, oh, my God, this was so much fun. I have to do this weekly. And luckily, SmackDown being on Friday nights at the time meant that it wasn't a school night, and it was on from 8 to 10, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., which was, you know, not as late as Raw at the time was 9 to 11, and also on Mondays, so I couldn't stay up for Raw. So I became a SmackDown guy, and that's why I gravitated to guys like Mysterio and Batista, because they were SmackDown guys at the time. Undertaker, SmackDown guy. At the time, you know, obviously you had the heels like Booker and Finley and Regal. And then guys like MVP and Mr. Kennedy would come along later on. And I really – they were – MVP and Kennedy were the two guys where – and I was still only like 10, 11 years old. But they were the first bad guys where I was like, those guys are cool. I kind of like them, especially MVP. MVP with the tunnel entrance, the awesome ring gear, the chains, the bling, the great theme song, and – You knew these guys were earmarked to be stars because they jumped right in with feuds with the likes of Undertaker and Kane.
Absolutely.
I'll never forget that Kane MVP Inferno match, just scaring the living daylights out of me because you literally lit a man on fire.
Yeah, it's interesting that MVP's recently made a comeback as well and done a couple of spots with the WWE.
Yeah, it's always good to see these guys come back home. MVP's obviously had a long career in and out of WWE. He worked over in Japan. I believe he was the inaugural Intercontinental IWGP Intercontinental Champion.
Certainly was.
He was, and he's also he's had success in Impact as well. But you know he's a guy that you see these WWE guys that they take off, they leave for a while, but you always hope for them to come back. And I was really excited to see him in the Rumble. And he's been working with, you know, he had a match with Rey Mysterio. He's done some segments with Drew McIntyre. And I think that only helps, you know, having a seasoned veteran on hand to sort of work with some of the guys you want to get over. MVP was always really good at that. And he still is. He still could go. He still could talk. You know, he's always a great talker. And I think he helps Matt. I think right now he's helping McIntyre, you know, with these little segments he's got. Yeah. And I think that's important because McIntyre is somebody that, for me, is still not quite – he's on his way there, but he still needs a little bit of something for me. I don't know what it is. I can't place it. But he's someone that I want to see succeed, and I think guys like MVP only serve to help him.
Yeah, absolutely. So during your time as a wrestling fan, has there ever been a period where you kind of stopped watching or you gave up on the product where it just wasn't speaking to you or you just weren't as invested as you used to be?
Of course, yeah, there was. I was hooked from 2006 through like 2008, especially to 2008 when Cena came back at the Royal Rumble, and then the whole Undertaker Edge storyline leading into WrestleMania and beyond. Like that was like peak wrestling for me. I was so into it, watching Raw and SmackDown every week. I was, you know, I was only 12, but I was like, hey, I'm gonna watch Raw. You know, I don't care. You know, I don't care what my parents say. I'm gonna watch Raw. I'm gonna sneak it up in my room, and you know, pretend to be asleep and turn the lights out when my parents came through. I was still more of a SmackDown guy, but you know, I was, you know, obviously Raw had some great talent too, and I was getting invested. I was loving it. Then, you know, I think it coincided with me hitting middle school in 2009. I turned 13. And I just was like, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't be watching this. Maybe it's kid stuff. And I fizzled out for a little bit. WrestleMania 25 and 26, didn't watch live. Didn't watch wrestling through 2009 and 2010. And then in 2011, I wasn't watching, but a friend of mine who I had, you know, we had watched wrestling pretty, we'd watched wrestling together through, you know, through those older days of like those 6 or 7 days. And we made a decision, you know, let's try. We didn't buy it. Sorry about this. And, you know, all out there. We illegally streamed WrestleMania 27.
At FBI.
Yeah, if the FBI is listening in, they're going to be knocking at my door. We illegally streamed WrestleMania 27. There was no network at the time. You had to buy the pay-per-views. And that's not a WrestleMania that people remember as a great one. And it really wasn't, honestly. I mean, the main event was Cena Miz, and it ended in a disqualification, I believe, or it ended in shenanigans because The Rock was involved. I don't even remember. Yeah. But that card also had Undertaker Triple H Part 1. And watching that match, I just felt all the feels again. I felt like a kid. I was like, this is freaking awesome. And I all those years that I had spent, those years I had spent away from the game, I was just like, what was I thinking? And why did I do this? You know, why should I care about, because a big part of wrestling is perception. A big part of being a wrestling fan is the perception of non-wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. You're always a little bit worried about, you know, what people think of you. And especially at a time when you're growing up, you're 13 years old, and you're like, oh no, you know, I don't want people to think I'm some sort of weirdo because I watch professional wrestling. I don't want people to think like that at all. So that's a big part of why I stepped away. And then it hit me like, you know, why should I give a rat's ass what other people think about professional wrestling or what people think about me? I love this stuff. I realize that now. Right? Just watching, you know, you're finding a shitty stream on some probably illegal website. Definitely illegal. It's finding that stream and firing it up with a buddy and just, you know, taking it in and just remembering what it was like to be a hardcore wrestling fan. It just changed the game. And from then on, I was like, we made a pact. Like, we're getting back into this. Every Monday night, I'd go over to my buddy's house for Raw. Sit there, even when they transitioned to 3 hours, you know, we sat there through all 3 hours, and, you know, we would watch SmackDown on Fridays, and then it transitioned to, you know, it moved all over the place, but we were Raw guys first and foremost at the time, because at that point in like 2011, 12, SmackDown really became just the B show. Mm-hmm. And it became something where, you know, if you half of it was recaps of Raw, half of it was stuff you just didn't care about. They turned it into Raw Super Show. So, like, Raw was really the only show worth watching at the time. And we just, like, we're going to do this. We're going to be wrestling fans again. We're going to get the pay-per-views. We're going to watch the shows. We're going to be fans. We're not going to care about what other people think. And we got a lot of gripes for it. I still get a lot of gripes for it from people. You know, why are you watching wrestling now? And I'm 23 years old now. Like, why are you watching wrestling? Because I love it. I'm never going to not love it. I'll never turn away from it again. Even now when I sometimes I feel like I'm disinterested, I'm never going to stop watching wrestling because it's always been there. You know, I'm sure we'll talk more about that, but they just wrestling. Yeah. WrestleMania 27 was what got me back in. And I went back and watched WrestleMania 25 and 26. And little did I know that I missed two of the all time great WrestleMania matches in Undertaker Shawn Michaels. So thankfully I got back into it because I missed 2 years of good stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that wrestling fans kind of have like this, they get like stereotyped as basement, the mum's basement dwellers and stuff like that. But I actually find that wrestling is one of the more sociable kind of entertainment activities, especially recently, and with the likes of wrestling Twitter and the popularity of indie wrestling, it's more social than it ever was before.
Oh, absolutely. Wrestling, it's definitely more commonplace now, too, to like wrestling. I know so many people that were initially, you know, they thumb their noses at wrestling. They're like, oh, it's fake. I'm not going to watch it, yada, yada, yada. You show them one show. You show them a WrestleMania. You show them a Royal Rumble. Hell, you show them an episode of Raw or SmackDown, and, you know, they're like, all right, I can see this. I can get this. And then they turn into wrestling fans. I know so many people like that. And it's definitely more common that way than, you know, I don't know that many people that have dropped out of wrestling recently. I think it's getting better. I think it's been better than it's ever been. I think it's been more easily digestible than it's ever been. And with the help of networks like ESPN and now Fox Sports picking it up and treating it like something that should be taken seriously, that was huge. I remember when ESPN first started working with wrestling back in 2015. It was before WrestleMania, and they had Heyman on one show. Because ESPN, there's ESPN and ESPN2. And they had Heyman on one channel and Brock Lesnar on the other channel. And Brock Lesnar just broke in the news that he had re-signed with WWE. And all this news was coming out, and ESPN was picking it up and treating it like big breaking news. And that was a huge hurdle cleared in wrestling, because that's when people were like, oh, maybe there is something to this wrestling business. If ESPN's taking it seriously, maybe I should too.
Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of touched on a really interesting point just then, with the fact that you don't see a lot of people actually dropping out of wrestling now. And for me, that's because of the amount of wrestling that there is available. When I was a fan, and certainly probably when you was a younger fan, if you didn't like the WWE product, you kind of didn't like wrestling, because there was no other option. Whereas now, if you're kind of disinterested in that product, there's thousands of other wrestling companies that are vying for your attention, and they're so easy to get access to. You can watch AEW, you can even go and watch wrestling from over my side of the pond in Britain at the click of a button. It's so easy to access. You can watch wrestling from Australia, Japan, Mexico, all from the comfort of your living room. And yeah, I think if you get disinterested as a wrestling fan now, then it's so easy to find the kind of wrestling style that you will enjoy.
Yeah, and you make a good point. Back in the day, you know, there wasn't that. You had TNA, and I was a TNA fan for a long time. Yeah, they were a nice alternative. I didn't consider them like competition to WWE, even though I know that they made themselves out to be for a while there. I just considered it as like another wrestling show. I never thought about it like, oh, I can only watch one. I have to be loyal to one and hate the other. I never thought about it like that. I just knew that, you know, TNA had some guys that could really, really, really wrestle their asses off. The Samoa Joes, the AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels was always a favorite of mine. And those three, obviously, you know, this is before I was watching wrestling, but I went back and watched some of their matches from 05, the Triple Threats. Ooh wee, that's good stuff. Yeah. But TNA was there, but it wasn't like, you know, huge. And outside of those two companies, you didn't really have access to anything else. You might stumble on Ring of Honor on your local channel on a Saturday night at like 2 a.m, but that's it. And it's so different now, and it's so really, really great to see that people are getting into it and finding their style, finding their favorite wrestlers and the style that suits them. It's really great to see as a wrestling fan, because you just want wrestling to grow.
Absolutely. So say Kevin has got some spare time and he can sit down and watch any wrestling event. What's your favorite event? What's the one event you can go back and watch over and over again and just sit there and enjoy it?
Oh man, there's a couple. the first like pay-per-view that sticks out to me, I went back, my friend had the DVD of it, so I watched it after the fact, was Royal Rumble 2006. And obviously, being a Rey Mysterio fan, seeing him win the Rumble, go 62 minutes, you know, longest ever, if you don't count Daniel Bryan and the Greatest Royal Rumble, which I don't, because that never happened to me. But that was just a sight, and it was so much fun. There were a lot of great names in that Rumble, a lot of great stories told. You know, Tatanka was in there, Road Warrior Animal was in there. You had the McMahon Shawn Michaels storyline furthered. You had just a lot of great talent in there, but obviously that last three of Rey Mysterio, Triple H, Randy Orton, and the sequence that followed was just pitch perfect to me. Mm-hmm. And then the next 2 months were great. You know, Rey Mysterio, challenger for the belt. He lost to Orton at No Way Out, but then Teddy Long was like, we're going to add you to the match anyway. It's going to be a triple threat at WrestleMania. It's going to be Kurt Angle, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio. And then Rey Mysterio winning the belt, never would have thought that happened. WrestleMania 22 is another event that I could probably watch at least that match over again. But I digress. If you're limiting me to one show right now that I could go back and watch over and over again, it's WrestleMania 31. I thought that was top. I don't think there was a match on that card that was anything less than good. The worst match on that card was probably the Divas tag match. There were still Divas at the time. The Divas tag match between the Bellas and AJ Lee and Paige, and that was still a really good match. And then on the flip side, you had the IC title ladder match was fantastic. Cena Rusev was a lot of fun. The Andre the Giant Battle Royal it was on the pre-show and it was fun. So it was that tag match on the pre-show, the World Tag Title match. You had Triple H and Sting, which I know a lot of people weren't crazy about because Triple H won, but I still thought the spectacle of it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And that main event, damn, that main event was good. It was so different. And it was, obviously we're used to Lesnar matches now being sort of suplex, suplex, suplex. And this was like the dawning of that. And it was so different at the time and so good. And obviously Seth Rollins coming in and cashing in was just mind-blowing. And, you know, we hadn't seen that at WrestleMania. We hadn't seen someone just hijack the WWE title like that. And knowing that Seth Rollins had a pretty damn good run with the belt after that, in my opinion, what makes it all worth it. That's a show that's probably my favorite pay-per-view of all time.
Yeah, a solid pick. For me, if I were to nail down one show, it probably would be WrestleMania 17. I know it's the cliche pick, but that was when I was at the heart of my kind of wrestling fandom, that they were all my guys at that time. So I think if I were to be pinned down to one pick, it would be that. But again, like you, I'm a massive fan of Royal Rumbles. And if I'm to just nail it down to one match or one kind of match, it would be, I would rather sit and watch back-to-back Royal Rumbles all day long, because it's just, you never can tell what's going to happen in a Royal Rumble. Even when you've watched it, you know the winners and you know who's coming out, but it's just the 10, 12, 14 guys in a ring, all that, battling away. It's just, I love watching a Royal Rumble. Absolutely love it.
I could watch any Rumble any day. I don't think there's ever been a bad. There have been some Rumbles that were lesser quality than others, sure. Mm-hmm. But even the worst Rumble is still a lot of fun. Like, 2012 was a pretty shitty Rumble, but it's still a lot of great memories, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So we touched on current products and how easy it is to access and kind of like spread your wrestling wings almost. What current wrestling products are you watching?
So there's, I'm again, with work and everything, I am finding myself a little limited as to how much wrestling I can watch. Mm-hmm. I'm forced to watch wrestling, in the middle of the night, in the morning before I go to work. Cause late shift. I work 3 PM to like 11 PM. So my schedule is a little all over the place. But I've been big into NXT recently. I think that's something that literally everyone could say. It's been so good. So good. The takeovers have never been bad, but like they just, every match is great on these last couple of takeovers. They just consistently raised the bar in NXT TV, which I once thought was expendable and not something I needed to watch, has become something that I need to watch. Everything that happens on NXT TV is important, and it adds to the story, adds to some sort of story. Everyone gets their chance to shine now that it's 2 hours. It's on live TV. It's airing head-to-head with AEW, which I also really enjoy. It's tough, but thankfully, with the WWE Network, I could watch NXT the next day and watch AEW live, which when I am afforded the time to get home and really watch these shows, that's my strategy is to watch AEW live, watch NXT the next day, And so, because I really don't want to miss a moment. I don't want to miss anything. You know, I don't want anything to sneak by me. It's so hard because there's so much wrestling. But I really want to catch everything that's important to me. And I think I do a pretty good job of it. Nothing really slips through the cracks. And it's, you know, especially with New Japan, which I've become a fan of as recently as 2017, 2018. Their shows, obviously, for me, air in the middle of the night. So it's not easy to stay up for those. I make exceptions for, you know, Wrestle Kingdom and Dominion and maybe the first night of the G1, except for this past year because it was in America, so I didn't have to worry about that. But it's just, you know, there's so much wrestling. It's inevitable stuff slips through the cracks. There's still matches that I have to go back and watch that I haven't seen yet. For example, I'm still catching up on The New Beginning in Osaka for New Japan. I still haven't watched Kenta Naito, and I'm really looking forward to it because I heard great things, and Naito is my guy in New Japan, so I'm looking forward to seeing him. I know what happened, obviously. I'm not, you know, I don't try to avoid spoilers for stuff like this because I know it's going to happen. I don't really make it a big deal. So I know what happened. I know, you know, basically the story of it all. I'm just looking forward to watching it. And that's how I feel about most every wrestling, most all wrestling, is even if I know what's going to happen, I still look forward to watching it.
Yeah, I agree. And in this world of spoilers, it's hard to not find out the results. And sometimes you're actually better off going and digging out the results. So you can, and it's not ruined for you. You know what you're going to be faced to when you watch the show. But yeah, that show is brilliant. And it's just for the fact that Hiromu is back.
Hiromu was, again, when I first got in New Japan on that Wrestle Kingdom 11 card, obviously my favorite match. You asked my favorite match from the card, I'm going to say Okada Omega because it's probably my favorite match of all time. Easily my second favorite match off that card was Hiromu and Kushida. Mm-hmm. I remember tweeting about it because, like, obviously the whole card blew me away. Every match was good. I think every match was really good. But we got to that match, and I was like, these guys were doing stuff that I had never seen before. And I was like, wow, man, that was a 5-star match. It doesn't get much better than that. Like, if that's, you know, that could have been the main event. I don't know why they're even trying the main event something else over that match. And sure enough, Okada Omega came along and literally changed the way I watch wrestling. Mm-hmm. I remember watching that match with we a couple of my friends and I, we chipped in for New Japan World, which is not expensive, so it was like, I think we threw like $3 a piece and we stayed up. I remember, you know, 2 bottles of soda and a bag of potato chips. I'm like, we're gonna do this. I had no clue how long the show was gonna run. It ran very long. we were at my friend's house and his mother was waking up to go to work and we're just sitting there watching wrestling. She's like, what the hell are you guys doing? And we're like, we're already knees deep in this. We can't back out now. But yeah, Okada Omega came on, and after the match, you know, 42 minutes, spots you'll never see again. Just everything was just pitch perfect. And I remember looking at my friends and just being like, I think we just watched the greatest match of all time. Like, I could not pinpoint a better match, and I still can't. I genuinely still can't. Just everything about that match for me was perfect, and that was the perfect way to get into New Japan. And from there, I was like, okay, maybe there's something to this. That first year, I watched Wrestle Kingdom. Didn't pay attention until Dominion. And then the G1, I was like, maybe I'll watch a little bit of the G1. And then I watched Wrestle Kingdom 12. Same story with my friends. But we had more friends this time because we had spread the word. And we're like, we have to watch it this year. And Wrestle Kingdom 12 was another really good show. My favorite match from that was Goto Suzuki in the Never Openweight title match. Just an absolute brutal, brutal barn burner of a match. And from there, I was like, all right, I have to make a decision here. I need to watch this routinely. And so I got the subscription to New Japan World, and I joined the group. This was before wrestling Twitter for me. So I was tweeting like on my personal account, like at 4 a.m, just like, oh my God, who is watching this? Like, this is crazy. And obviously no one that I interact with on my personal Twitter is really watching New Japan at 4 in the morning, so those tweets went unnoticed, but that's okay.
Yeah, that whole series between Okada and Omega is damn near perfect. And I agree with you that first match was absolutely amazing. But for me, it's always going to be the fourth match, the Dominion match.
Yeah.
That kind of stands out for me. I've said when it happened, and I don't think I've changed my mind, it's the closest to a perfect wrestling match that I've ever seen in the time I've watched wrestling.
Oh, it's phenomenal. All four of them were phenomenal. I loved every single one of them. I really loved their G1 match because it was they put basically an hour's worth of wrestling into 30 minutes, and it was just beautiful. I like that one a lot. I mean, I like them all. I like them all, but
And you kind of touched on a point about there being so much wrestling that you struggle to keep up with it all, and for me, that's like the best first world problem that we could ever have.
It is a really, really good problem. Yeah. No, there's too much of it. I can't keep up with all the good shit going on.
Exactly. I mean, I've been saying for such a long time that I'm going to get into Stardom, and it's just finding that gap and that time to be able to do it. And I know I'm missing out on some amazing wrestling, but we're so inundated with top quality wrestling that you can't really go wrong. Even if you're missing out on one product, there's certainly another product that will fill that need.
Yeah, and Stardom's one that I you know, when the year started, I was like, all right, there's promotions I gotta watch. They're primarily in Japan because I've gravitated towards the Japanese style. And I'm like, Stardom, Noah, and maybe All Japan. Obviously, I don't think I have time for all three, but like I have to, you know, I want to make some decisions, and I want to watch some more wrestling. Our buddy Alex Fullwood from Wrestling Twitter sent me a link to a match that I have to watch from January 4th from I think it's Noah. It's their world title, the GHC World Heavyweight Championship match between Go Shiozaki and Kaito Kiyomiya, and I have to watch that because I made a tweet the other day that was like, you know. I think I was tweeting about Moxley Suzuki from New Beginning in Osaka, and I'm not a Moxley fan. I've documented myself as saying I'm not a John Moxley guy, but I don't think there's a match that's happened yet this year that I liked more than Moxley Suzuki, and I tweeted that, and he sent me the link to this match on YouTube. He's like, "Yeah, you'll change your mind," and so I'm very excited to get to that, but it's finding the time.
Exactly. And like I said, it's the best first world problem that we could ever have as wrestling fans.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned there about wrestling Twitter, how you weren't really that involved into it, but right now you are knees deep in wrestling Twitter. You're one of the most level-headed people, I would say, especially in my wrestling Twitter world. But wrestling Twitter can be quite a divisive, sometimes very, very toxic place. How have you experienced wrestling Twitter and it's kind of like good side and it's bad side?
Yeah, it's definitely two sides to the coin. Wrestling Twitter has been good to me more so than bad, I'd say. It's been since October of 2018 is when I started my blog. I had been going through a rough patch in my life. I've been dealing with some depression, some anxiety, some struggles. And I wanted to do something for me. I wanted to do something that combined that I loved. And I'm like, well, what two things do I love more than most anything else? I love writing and I love wrestling. Wrestling has always been there for me through the ups and downs, through the bad and the good. It's always been there, you know. Even when I left it behind, it never disappeared, and it was always sort of on the periphery of my mind. Like, I knew it was there, and I got back into it, and I'm never going to let it go. And I wanted to do something to really sort of cement myself as, like, this big wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, let's start, you know, blogging is popular. Let's start a blog. And so I started The Last Blogger Standing in October of 2018. And before then, I had tweeted a lot about wrestling for my personal Twitter account. And I know it was driving people crazy. I know people just don't. Like, people I follow on there just don't. They just didn't care. And I was like, you know, there's a better way to do this. You know, I want to reach out to people that do care, and I want to interact with people that care about wrestling. And I know that I knew they're out there. It was just a matter of finding them. So I started a new Twitter account, the Kevin C. Wrestling account, which used to be just at Last Bogger Standing before I made it sort of a more all-encompassing account. It was purely for the blog. And I started following just anybody that anybody that seemed like they tweeted about wrestling. You were one of the first people I followed, Mags. I don't know why.
Yeah, I can't tell you for what happened.
Yeah, you definitely though, and I hopped on the Twitter, and I've amassed a pretty decent following over the last year and a half. I'm up to 4,000 followers, and some days it's very. Some days I like not 100 notifications a day. Some days I don't get any, and that's fine. Some days I don't want that many notifications, quite frankly. But it's been more good than bad. I've met so many great people, yourself included. The whole Brainbuster team, Josh. Obviously, without wrestling Twitter, I would never have met Josh. And that's a nice story. That's a fun story too. I was getting it. I was, you know, just finding my feet. I was about a couple months in, and I was, you know, I was having a good time. This was really good for my psyche, for my mental health. This is really good for me. Like that, I can't stress that on how important wrestling Twitter has been for me. And the next logical step was I was following all these people, and they're following me back, and we were chatting, and I'm like, well, a lot of these people have podcasts, and I'm like, oh, podcasts. You know, I've never been a podcast guy, but you know, maybe they're interesting. Maybe I'll take a listen to one or two, and I listened to one. It was a roundtable show, and one of the guests was our very own friend Josh Robinson. And it wasn't like holy, I need to get on a show with this kid, but I liked his style, I liked his accent, and I was like, I didn't know anybody from Australia, so I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he mentioned at the end of the show, this was in probably December of 2018. He mentioned at the end of the show that he was, you know, he was looking for guests. And I was like, huh, I had never done that before. But I wanted to step out of my comfort zone a little bit. And I do like to talk. I'm a big talker. You know, I did television in college. I know how to talk. I could talk for hours. So I'm like, why don't I just do this? Why don't I just join this show? Why don't I just hop on? I'll send him a DM, say, hey, you need a guest. I'm your guy. You know, shoot the shit, talk wrestling for an hour. Why not? Like, what's the harm? I love that. So I linked up with Josh, and we did a Royal Rumble review of the 2019 Royal Rumble, and we did it right after the show. So we were like delirious, and we talked for like 90 minutes about the Rumble, and just we were having such a great time. And I got off that call thinking, like, this was really fun. I need to start making some moves and getting on some more shows. Little did I know that like 2 days later, Josh was going to send me a DM saying, hey, do you want to be my co-host? I was so taken aback. I was like, co-host? That had never crossed my mind. I had never thought about having a podcast. I was a writer, you know, I wanted to focus on my writing. But this was an offer, you know, to quote the great Don Corleone, this is an offer I just couldn't refuse. I couldn't pass it up. You know, it was a chance to broaden my horizons, to meet more people, which at the time was like my number one goal, was to meet people and to get more heavily involved in this wrestling world. And I said, yeah, I took the leap of faith, and I said, yeah. And, you know, we've been going a year strong now, and I think it's been pretty good. We've gotten some pretty good reviews. Sometimes we don't even talk about wrestling. Sometimes we talk about nonsense. And I think those are the most fun shows to record, honestly, are the ones where we go off the rails and just talk about anything. We always circle back to wrestling, but it's like Wrestling Reverb has become this show where it's like it could be – it's so many different things. It's grown so much over just as long as I've been there. And I think we're in a really great – I think we found our footing. We've got a really great, you know, burst of momentum behind us there. But to sort of circle back to the wrestling Twitter in general, It's been more, definitely been more positive for me. I've met so many great people. I've made so many great connections through here. I've gotten to do some cool things through here. Obviously, you have to take the good with the bad. And there are some really, really just toxic individuals on wrestling Twitter. I'm not going to name names. I think we all know the implications I'm making. But those people are like, you know, they're the outliers. They're the exceptions to the rule. Like, wrestling Twitter as a whole is a great place. There's a lot of, you know, there might be disagreements, but for the most part, they're civil. You know, we don't always agree. Me and Josh don't agree on a lot of stuff, but it's always civil. It's we take the time to listen to each other's viewpoints, and we just make arguments based on our own viewpoints, but we always lend light to the other person. We always, you know, we share the conversation.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think, and you made a good point about the toxic people being the outliers. I think they are the very, very small minority. It's just that they have the biggest voice, they make the loudest noise, and that's
they're big mouths. Yeah, but for the large part, I find that they are all substance, or they're all sizzle and no steak. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they talk a big game, but if you press them on something, that they will fold like an accordion. Sometimes, as much as like I try to follow Josh's example here, because he's a big believer in, you know, you don't engage, you just move on. Sometimes it doesn't work, because there's a small part of me in the back of my head that's like, oh, you gotta like put this guy in his place. And sometimes, you know, that doesn't always, that rarely works out. But I am a believer that sometimes these people do need to be put in their place. Because if you just let them talk and just ignore it, you could say that, you know, engaging with them means they win. But I think letting them spew vitriol unabated is also letting them win. Yeah. And sometimes you just have to put your foot down and say something.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like a... you can't win either way.
You really can't. There is no winning with some of these trolls.
Yeah, if you engage with them, you're feeding the troll. But if you don't kind of put them right on the stuff that they're saying, they kind of like start believing their own bullshit almost.
Yeah, and you see it a lot. There's a lot of people out there that think their own shit smells good, and you know, they think that they are somewhat above the rest. That's the thing that bothers me, is that they're above the rest of the community. Their opinion matters more. The notion that other people's opinions are false, when opinion itself is something that can't really be false, because it's not, it's just someone's beliefs. Mm-hmm. That drives me off the wall. And people are like, "Yeah, dude, you know, you're stupid. Your opinion is invalid. You're not a good wrestling fan. You're stupid." Like, that's just such bullshit. Like, that is so stupid. You know, we could all get along here. We could all have our own opinions. You don't have to put anybody down for liking something, for not liking something, for sharing this opinion or that opinion. It's all opinion. It's all subjective.
Exactly, and I think that's the downside of the anonymity of wrestling Twitter. It affords you kind of like to be able to put a facade on and be like the kind of person that you wouldn't necessarily be if you were speaking to someone face to face.
Yeah, it's really easy to talk a lot of crap behind the keyboard, you know, and it's just the way it is. You know? It's the platform. It's the downside of Twitter. Twitter comes with blessings and curses, man, and it's other social media platforms as well. But Twitter, I think, is most prominent for wrestling, at least in my experience. And yeah, a lot of people say a lot of things they probably wouldn't say if you ever were face to face with somebody.
Absolutely.
That's just the, you know, giveth and taketh away.
Yeah. And but on the opposite side of that, there's so many amazing people who I've met through wrestling Twitter. I've met some amazing connections, met some really, really good personalities, some really, really good friends through wrestling Twitter. So it's hard to kind of like shit on it, because it's brought so much depth to my wrestling world.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you know, for every bad apple on here, there's like a dozen really, really great people you meet. Mm-hmm. And without wrestling Twitter, I don't know, you know, what I'd be doing, where I'd be. Like, I honestly just, you know, I give the community a lot of credit for just keeping me going and keeping me afloat. And I love it. I love most everybody on here. You know, I'm not a hater. I don't really have hate for anybody. And I mean, like you said, you know, you meet so many great people, you make so many great connections. Obviously, when it comes to us, you think about the Brainbuster team and all the great people that are associated with there and that we're still friends with and we still collab with to this day. The Queens, the Headlock Talks, the JP. I'm trying to shout them all out. Conrad, Omega Luke. It's great. It's just a great bunch of really talented individuals. That's the thing, is that you sometimes forget, because we're all friends, you sometimes forget just how talented some of these people are. Like, just the strides that people have made. I'll shout out Queen, because Queen was newer to the podcast game than I was. She started after, like, a couple months. She didn't get started until a couple of months after I did. Mm-hmm. And just look at her now. Like, she's, you know, she's getting killer guests. She's on everybody's platform. She's literally in everybody's ears. She's built such an incredible following, and she's so popular, and that's because she's so goddamn talented. Yeah. She's so good at this. It's amazing that she's been doing this for like less than a year.
Yeah. I mean, that whole group of people, I mean, the way that Brainbuster ended obviously will go down probably in wrestling Twitter infamy. We'll never be able to kind of escape what happened. But for a long time, Brainbuster was the hottest thing in our social group. Everybody was talking Brainbuster. We were putting out amazing content. I mean, I've always been self-deprecating. I think I'm probably the least talented of our group, but to just be involved with such amazing people, it kind of made me want to be a better creator. And just seeing the likes of you guys at Wrestling Reverb, JPQ, who, again, I think he's not been in the game that long, and then obviously Queen, who's the star of that little group. She's so taken to it like an absolute duck to water. I think, looking back on the content that I've created, it took 10, 20, maybe even 30 episodes for me to really find my groove. She found it on episode one, and she's just been getting better ever since.
Yeah, it's a special skill. And honestly, she's been, from day one, just been killing it. And, you know, we've all been killing it, man. You've been killing it. There's no way around it. There's no way around it, dude. Badlands, Why We Watch. I'm not like a huge UFC guy, but Five Rounds, it's everything. You're like the hardest working man in showbiz.
Thank you very much. You learn to be efficient, I think, is the way I'd look at it. I mean, as you'll know, I'm recording literally two podcasts in one. You kind of learn that efficiency and that time management almost.
Oh, time management is absolutely crucial. And that's one of the things I still am working on myself. Obviously, with the podcast, you know, me and Josh have a pretty set schedule and we stick to it. With work, sometimes it gets in the way. Sometimes Josh has to go solo. I hate when that has to happen, but you know, life gets in the way, as we know, because it's taken me like 7 months to get on this show. But as it pertains to the blogging, which I acknowledge that with my new job, with the job I started in July, which is a dream job of mine, and it allows me to take my writing, which is my favorite thing to do, and parlay it into a career. The downside to that being I have less time to do my personal stuff, my personal writing. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to find a better balance between work and the blog, because I want to blog more. I've been not neglecting it, but I've definitely been sort of stepping away from it. I put more of my efforts into the Daily Chinlock, which is the sort of blog that the website I launched in it's been a couple months now. With a couple different writers who they're talented. They're just looking for a way to really break out into the stratosphere and get their work out there. You know, it kills me to see writers that you know, they publish their work and I read it. I try to read literally every writer on wrestling Twitter. I try to read their work when I can. And there's so many really talented writers out there, but some of them just, they don't have the following yet to really broaden their work to get it to a wide audience. So what I was hoping for, and it's a work in progress as everything is for this new site to be a good place for some of these writers to have that platform, to use my reach, the reach that I've built up through, you know, the hard work I've put in over the last year and a half. And I want to use that and extend it to others so that they could have a big platform to work. And you know, yeah, and it's slow and steady, but you know, we're doing pretty well. You know, we get readership every day. There's new content every couple of days. I myself haven't written anything new in a while, but I've been taking a back seat because some of these guys are so talented that it doesn't even matter what I do, because you have guys like Mike Charlip and Paul Skivers and the rest of the Aussie Lucian fellas and just a bunch of talented guys and gals. And there's definitely bloggers out there that I'm looking to rope in. I know some people don't need that platform. I know there are a lot of talented writers out there that are just killing it on their own, and I want nothing more than to see them succeed, but I selfishly want them to be under my umbrella.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really amazing that you're using that kind of reach that you've built up to pay it forward to these like newer bloggers who like I said don't have anywhere to put their work out. And there's so many talented writers and bloggers out there who don't get that kind of audience, and it's great that you're being able to do that and you're being able to provide them that platform.
Yeah, you know, I do what I can, and we just had the Wrestling Writing Awards that I put on in January, which I saw that the Wrestle Hub did the Wrestling Podcast Awards, and we could talk about, you know, the validity of those, but it's a good idea, and I think that, you know, I saw that there's so many podcasts out there, but there are also so many writers out there. And I'm like, well, I want there to be a place for these guys to feel like they're shining and that they're being recognized for their work. And the turnout I got voting wise for that was completely, I expected like maybe a dozen votes each category. And it blew me away how many people were actually invested in voting and in selecting the best blogger, the funniest blogger, the best news site, shit like that. Becky at Do It With Flareon was the almost, it wasn't unanimous, but it was pretty damn close to being unanimous best blogger. And from having read her work over the last year and a half, I completely concur with that. She's got such a great style about her, and she's got such a wicked sense of humor. And not only in her blogs, but if you just read her tweets, like her tweets are pretty goddamn funny. her interactions with other people are pretty great. And she's terrific. And I'm glad that she had somewhere where, you know, people, she could be recognized for her hard work. She works as hard, if not harder, than anybody on this whole app. And I just wanted her to be recognized for her efforts. I wanted a place for sites like Fightful and Bell to Bells and Diva Dirt and other news sites to be recognized for their work, because they work just as hard every single day.
Absolutely.
As everybody. And, you know, and we'll do it again, and we'll do it again at the end of this year. And hopefully we'll have more, as more and more writers emerge, we'll have more and more people on the ballot. I've already seen a couple new bloggers just in the popping up in the last month or so. And that makes me so happy. Because I just want people to write. I just love writing. I love writing, and I love reading writing, and I love reading other people's wrestling stuff. And yeah. I love seeing other viewpoints expressed, and I love just picking up on other people's styles and the way they like things, the way they word things. It's all really fascinating to me, and I'm just really glad that we're seeing a growth in not just – I mean, obviously podcasts are booming. They're growing. But writing is too, and I think that that's so important.
Yeah, I mean, any way that people can get out there, kind of creative side. It can only be a good thing. And you touched on the validity of the these kind of awards, and you mentioned the Wrestle One, and I certainly did have several issues with the person behind the Wrestle Hub account, but that's not to say I questioned the validity of the awards. Any kind of recognition for people putting in their hard work, that to me is it makes it valid enough. As a podcaster and with you as a writer, you'll know that sometimes it's a very kind of lonely medium. You don't always get the feedback. You don't always know whether you're hitting the right kind of notes or you're making the right kind of connections almost. And sometimes you need that feedback. Sometimes you need that validity to kind of know where you're going wrong and where you can change or what you could do better and stuff like that. So there's definitely a place for that kind of like validation.
Yeah, and everyone, and at the end of the day, everyone likes to feel validated. And if I could be a small part of that and offer a place for people to be validated for their work, then so be it. I will do that happily till the end of time. I just love seeing people get their well-deserved credit. And there are just so many talented people out there that don't get enough credit. Just off the top of my head, guys like Conrad and Alex Fullwood, two talented writers that were part of the Brainbuster OP family, which, you know, we could talk about that for probably another 2 hours, but that there were so many talented writers there. And that's the mindset I wanted for Daily Chinlock, was I wanted, you know, that sort of style. I wanted that's what I wanted. I wanted that sort of platform. And we haven't gotten there yet, but we will get there. And with the help of the writers we have and maybe bringing in – I know Conrad started his own little website, Ring Crew Magazine, and I wish him nothing but the best. Selfishly wish he was with me, but I'm going to read his work till the end of time because he's one of the most talented writers I've ever come across. And his wealth of knowledge – is so vast for someone who's younger than I am. Yeah, I don't remember. I think he's like 19 or something.
Yeah.
And he just knows so much about the history of wrestling. And so does Alex Fullwood. I don't know how old he is, but his work on the four pillars of All Japan, in the Walking the King's Road series that he put on Brainbuster OP was literally like, that's literally what I know about All Japan, is what I know from his writing. And I credit him with any interest that I may have in that. I give that credit firmly to him.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of my knowledge and a lot of the stuff that I've got into in terms of Japanese wrestling is directly from Alex. I think he's got a list of outstanding matches to watch, and I regularly go to that list and pick off matches that if I've got spare time, I'll sit and watch. And I've never been steered wrong yet. He's got such a wealth of knowledge of that kind of area of wrestling.
Yeah, he really does, and it's incredible. And yeah, I've looked at that list myself, and that's something I need to take more careful look at, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And now on to Conrad. Yeah, the guy is so talented. I've had the pleasure of being able to record a couple of podcasts with him for Matt Willis's The Matt Attack. And yeah, such a talented kid. And I think he's doing wrestling training now, so he's actually training to become a wrestler.
That's awesome, man. I see so many. Like, I know our buddy Luke, Omega Luke, is doing some wrestling training, and I'm envious because I think my time has passed. I'm also like so excited for them. Like, I want to know these guys and I want to follow their journey through the ropes and just to see where they end up. You know, it's so cool. Yeah, and I think every wrestling fan has probably dreamed at some point of being a wrestler. I'm not athletic, so I'm like, I know my limitations, so I'm perfectly fine watching from the seats. But it is cool to see these guys grow and become wrestlers and to follow their journey. And I wish them nothing but the best, and I hope we see them on our TV screen someday.
Yeah, I think Luke's got his first match coming up very, very soon, I think.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it's awesome. Doing so, so well. He's really, really enjoying it. And he's doing, I mean, he's can't, after the Brainbuster ship went down, he was so disengaged from the wrestling community that he doesn't do anything really to do with wrestling in terms of content creation. But he's absolutely killing it in a video game streaming. He's got a YouTube channel. He's actually making money off it. So absolutely good on him. Good props.
Yeah, that was obviously we were all left in a tough spot after that whole debacle. But I think Luke maybe may have been in the Luke stuck his neck out and got burnt. And you know I don't blame him for feeling disengaged with wrestling, with the wrestling community. But to see him, yeah, he still loves wrestling. Clearly, he's doing the training. His video game streaming is off the chain. Like some of the things he posts about it are so funny. Like, some of the comments that people leave are so funny, and I love that. And I love seeing him just find himself again, and then keep on keeping on, and he's killing it. And I think we could all say in the aftermath of the Brainbuster thing, we're all killing it right now, man. I mean, look at you, Mr. Three podcasts,
give all
making guest appearances on the Warren Hayes show, and you're all over the map. JPQ, same thing, all over the map, doing some Joshi work with the Joshi pod. Queen, obviously we can't say enough about Queen. The Headlock Talk boys have had me and Josh on recently. We had a great time. You were on there too, weren't you?
I certainly was.
All right. Mr. Three Podcast and doing guest appearances all over the map.
Yeah, and honestly, I do not know how I found the time for it, but if anyone ever sends like me a DM or asks me to come on, I don't think I've ever said no, because I just love talking about wrestling.
I don't think I'll ever turn anybody down. I've done some shows with the United by Wrestling fellas asked me, and they had I like the aesthetic of it, because they were a podcast that at the time no one really knew about, and I was like, I had tweeted like, hey, if you guys are looking for guests, I just tweeted like in general, if you guys are looking for guests, I'm your guy. And I got a DM from the United by Wrestling guys, and I had never heard their stuff. I had never heard of them, but I'm like, I'm not going to say no. And look at them, they're killing it now. And me vainly thinking I gave them the bump. In reality, they're just two talented dudes who are really good at talking about wrestling. Same with, the worst podcast I was just on. That's the name. I'm not making fun of the podcast. They terrific, terrific work over there. Josh was on there as well. They're on their way. They're planning a. I don't want to spoil anything. So whatever. I guess I am. They're planning a major super show for around WrestleMania times. So keep an eye out, ear out for that. I just love doing. I just love doing. Podcasts now. I've become a big podcast guy. I love jumping on everybody's shows with them. I'm looking forward to. I don't have anything lined up right now, but I'm sure I will. I'm sure I'll be jumping back on. I'm just looking forward to the next adventure and what comes next, and just riding this wave that I've been on. It's been spectacular, and I wouldn't trade the last year and a half of wrestling content creation for the world. It's been great.
It certainly has. And I think that's the good thing about wrestling social media and wrestling content creation, that there's so many different podcasts and we're all kind of like clamoring for the same kind of listeners, but there's no real like bitterness, or there's no real, it's not like a very like a dog eat dog kind of competition. We're all going out and we're all helping each other, and we're all appearing on each other's shows, and we kind of like, it's like a rising tide raising all ships kind of thing, where we're all wanting each other to be better and in turn becoming better content creators ourselves.
Yeah, it is interesting that we're all doing the same thing, and we're all clamoring, like you said, for the same listeners. But we did. It's not a sense of competition. There's no back and forth. There's no real like you said. There's no bitterness. There's no vitriol. It's just everyone likes everybody, and everyone wants everybody to succeed. So we do each other's shows, and we tweet about each other's shows, and we retweet and we share links, and we just build everybody up because it just makes everybody better. Everyone deserves a space to be heard. And I'm really, really glad that I, you know, every time I'll never get tired of people tagging me in their shows. I'll never get tired of people tagging me in tweets saying a new episode. I'll never get tired of that. I will always retweet those because I want everyone to succeed in this crazy world we live in. I want everyone's podcast to be heard and to succeed. And I wish there was more time a day so I could listen to every single one, every episode all the time. There's just not enough hours in the day. I don't listen to them three times the speed like you.
Yeah, I think when I wake up in the morning and I'll check my podcast app, there'll sometimes be like 20, 30 hours of podcasts on there ready to be listened to. So if I didn't listen at three times the speed, I just wouldn't get through as many podcasts as I do.
Literally, there just isn't enough time.
And again, it's another amazing first world problem.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. Like, you know, I don't have enough time to listen to podcasts. Something, what a complaint. It really is a good problem to have, and it's going to keep growing because there's always more podcasts coming into the community, and I'm always going to be there to support them and to build them up and to you know, give them the old retweet and the like and the love and the share and all that. I love seeing new podcasts. I hate seeing old podcasts go. I know, obviously, we had our buddy Anthony from Smart to Death sign off. For he's still active in the community. He's still tweeting about wrestling. But you know, Smark to Death was the first podcast I ever listened to, wrestling wise. That was fan driven, I should say. And I didn't even realize that there were like fan driven wrestling podcasts out there. I just thought, you know, your Talk is Jericho's, your Stone Cold podcast, you had those. But to hear wrestling talk from people that are just like me, that are just fans that really love wrestling, that was like an eye-opening experience. And Smark to Death was the first one. That was the one. That was where they were one of the first ones I followed, one of the first ones I listened to. And I was like, oh, these guys, because at the time it was two guys. It wasn't just Anthony. But it was just great. And, you know, it sucks to see them go. I tweeted this. Anthony's got an open seat on Wrestling Reverb whenever he wants it, if he wants it, to talk wrestling. I don't know. He might be taking a break, and you know, I think everyone takes a break. Obviously, we talked about, you know, my break from 2010 and 11. Everyone takes that break. Everyone gets a little disillusioned with the business after a while, and it is important to take that break, because you come back feeling re-energized, refueled, and just refocused.
I totally agree, and it's quite a popular choice is Smart Step for people who have come on this show and said what their like first dip into fan created content was. Their name comes up quite a lot, and I've always kind of like labeled Anthony as like the gold standard of what we do. He's always the kind of person who you strive to like emulate because of how good at doing a podcast, he really, really is. His life has took a big, big change. He's now, I think he's qualified to be a teacher, and I think it's today his wife has given birth to their first son. So
true.
Yeah, so real life kind of did take Smart to Death away from us, but I'm sure once he's into like the groove of things, he'll be back. It's kind of like a drug, his wrestling podcast, and you kind of can't kind of shake that feeling. You always want to dip your toe back in.
You get the itch, man. You get the
shakes.
Oh man, you're like a junkie. I agree. It is something that it's like once you start it, it's in your blood. Yeah, and you never really let it go. And obviously, yeah, the real world comes first. And congratulations, obviously, to having a kid. That's crazy. That's awesome. But I think we'll see him. I think we'll see the kid back sooner or later. And if not, it was a great run.
Absolutely. So let's circle back to Wrestling Reverb. We touched on it, but I don't think we stayed on the topic for too long. My first kind of interaction with Josh was on a round table with Wolf just a few months before the old Brainbuster thing kind of like started. I was very, very early into my podcasting creating, and Josh was a solo, and I'd actually never heard of any of his content. But what I tend to do when that situation comes up is I'll go back and I'll kind of like check out his stuff. So I did that. I contacted him after we did the podcast, and I ended up being on his show. He ended up coming on to Why Watch, and we built up a really good friendship. And then you were added to the show, and I've said this to him on his show, and I've said this to him on my show as well. Whilst Wrestling Reverb was a very, very good podcast, when he added you to that, it was kind of that missing thing that you didn't know that you needed. I think you brought a kind of like a fresh viewpoint. You brought somebody for him to bounce off, and it kind of elevated that show for me as a listener and as a fan especially.
Yeah, I do hear that a lot, and I'll never get tired of hearing it. So continue to say it, please. But when I joined Reverb, and I listened to some, I went, you know, as part of some prep, I before my first appearance, I did go back and listen to some, and yeah, it was good. It was very good. And Josh is a dynamic human being, and he's such an infectious personality that you want to listen to him talk no matter what. But I do feel like joining Reverb was the best decision for everybody, for me. I think that it did bring the show to a new sort of level. I think it brought in a new audience. I think that it just brought a new dynamic to the whole thing. And, you know, it is nice to have someone to bounce off of. And it's nice to have someone that doesn't always, you know, there's someone else there in the room with you, or in this case, in the virtual room with you, that, you know, you bounce ideas off of. Sometimes they don't stick. Sometimes you have disagreements, and that oftentimes makes for the most compelling listen, is when me and Josh disagree on something and argue with each other about it. And it happens more frequently than not, especially recently. I feel like me and Josh, especially with the advent of AEW and Josh's hateration of it. Not that I'm like a huge AEW fan, but I am a fan. And then we've disagreed over some other things. Most recently, the Dakota Kai Tegan Knox thing. I've referred to myself on Twitter as the president of the Tegan Knox fan club. Josh, on the other hand, is a big Dakota Kai fan. So we had some beef over it. We've had some beef over some non-wrestling related topics too. Most notably, High School Musical. It's become a staple of the show that we disagree on something completely unrelated to wrestling and spend at least 20 minutes arguing about it. It's become as much a part of Reverb as wrestling has. Something we jokingly refer to it sometimes as not Wrestling Reverb, but just Josh and Kevin Reverb. And it's just, yeah, we just lose it sometimes. And I think that's part of the fun, you know. And I love talking about wrestling, but I also love talking about pop culture, and I love talking about, you know, TV and movies and music and all that stuff. So it's cool that we do have, you know, we have some leeway with what we've done with the show recently, where we could talk about that stuff and not necessarily putting ourselves in a box.
Yeah, and I think that's, for me, that's one of the best things about Wrestling Reverb, is it's not pigeonholed, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing to be pigeonholed. I know for my shows, they follow a quite a similar formula, but your show can be, one week it can be reviewing a wrestling show, the next week it could be focusing on a certain topic, and then the week after it could be interviewing someone in the wrestling business, and you kind of have that like diversity of content that always keeps it kind of fresh. You never quite know what you're going to get with Wrestling Reverb until the show starts, almost.
Yeah, we've definitely built up a reputation as being a little bit tough to predict, which I think is good. I know that a lot of times when I get feedback about Reverb, it's often about the non-wrestling stuff that people really enjoy. And I think that, like, I think people, you know, I think people just look for different things sometimes. I think obviously we're all here for wrestling, but it's, you know, wrestling with a side of music or with a side of books or literally anything. The one episode was soup. Like, it's just anything could happen on Wrestling Reverb. And that's the reputation I think we want. I think that, you know, we want to be known as the show where literally we could be talking about match quality from the 2000 Royal Rumble and then launch right into, you know, Harry Potter. And it'd be seamless and transition well, and it just makes sense. And it always, we always circle back. Yeah, we sometimes circle back. I shouldn't say always, but we have our formula and our niche, and we just roll with it. And it's people like it, and it blows my mind that there are people out there that listen to me talk for an hour a week. And Josh, like, you know, who puts up with that accent? But it is crazy that there are people out there that are willing to spend their time listening to Reverb and even like it beyond Reverb, you know, reading the blogs and stuff like that. But with Reverb, it's just become such a dream come true. It went from something that I never thought I would do to something that I could never see myself without.
Yeah. I feel the same with these podcasts. The minute that they stop being fun is probably the minute that I'll stop doing the shows. For me, it's never been about clout chasing or it's never been about numbers. I couldn't tell you how many people listen, to be fair. And I kind of gauge that from the feedback that I get on Wrestling Twitter, and it seems to be overwhelmingly positive, and it's good to hear. So thinking about all the shows that you've done with Wrestling Reverb and with Josh, which show could you say is the one that you're most proud of? Which show can you say is the one that kind of signals what you envisage Wrestling Reverb to be about?
Oh, Jesus. Oh my God. That's a really great question that I wasn't prepared for. There have been plenty of shows. Again, like that formula of wrestling with a side of bullshit is my favorite kind of episode. But we've also done some really good work. You know, the interview with Chris Van Vliet, me and Josh did, was fantastic. I thought he's a great guy. I'd love to pick his brain. Seeing him kill it is just really cool. Like, oh, we got that guy on our show, and now he's doing great. Josh did an interview with Alicia too for the Josh Robinson show that I sadly couldn't be a part of, but that's another one that she is on top of the world right now, and that's just a really great interview to have in the books. But you know, if I'm thinking just regular episode, nothing special. I did like the post WrestleMania show that I believe it was me, Josh, you, and JPQ did after Mania right after Mania. Which was a 7-hour friggin' show.
I vaguely remember it. I do remember it, but I remember I was awake for about 40 hours that day just because time zones and stuff like that. Yeah, I loved doing that show. It was so good.
That was a toughie. That was a good show. That took a lot of perseverance on everyone's part, and I think we pulled that one together well. I really loved. There was an episode there where we literally talked about like Percy Jackson books and all sorts of things like Disney Channel stuff. The first ever episode where we diverged into Disney Channel stuff, because me and Josh are both Disney Channel fans growing up, and to an extent we still are. I love going back and watching the old stuff. There was an episode there where we just completely went off the rails for the first time and diverged into all this sort of stuff about books and Disney and movies and music and everything, and it was like not even a Wrestling Reverb episode. It was a Josh and Kevin Reverb episode, and that one I don't remember the date, so I couldn't tell you, but it was a lot of fun, and we got a lot of feedback on it from people just being like, "Holy shit, didn't expect it to go that way, but I really liked it." And that's exactly what I want people to say. I want them to say, "Holy shit," when they listen to Wrestling Reverb.
Yeah, and like I said, it's the dynamism of the show. you don't know what's going to... I mean, I kind of have a little bit of a peek behind the curtain still being involved with you guys as part of the former Brainbuster team. But even coming up to the day of the show, you never quite know what the show's going to be about. And that's the beauty of Wrestling Reverb for me as a podcast fan, not even as a podcast creator. I'm kind of like you. I started with... wrestling podcasts like the big names, the Stone Colds, the Jerichos, the Conrad Thompson ones, but it's the fan creator content that I listen to now the most, because the people like me, the fans who have wanted to go out and create content and tell their opinion about wrestling, and that kind of speaks to me more than someone who's in the business and who's kind of like trying to sell you something or trying to advertise something to you rather than doing it for the love of just speaking to wrestling fans.
Yeah, it's definitely an entirely different vibe you get from fans than you get from the actual guys in the business. Like, you know, they talk, sometimes you get the feeling that they're sort of talking down a little bit and they're not on your level, they're above your level. And I just love the fan podcasts, because they are you. They are your peers. They are your friends. They've gone through similar life experiences. They've gone through similar wrestling experiences. You share a lot of history with a lot of these people, and it really reflects in the work that they do, that they're just fans, man. They're just, at the end of the day, they just love the business and they just really want to talk about what they love. And who could fault anybody for wanting to talk about what they love?
Absolutely. And what a perfect way to end that segment. Yeah, just doing what you love. It's absolutely, that's the essence of this show. And you can clearly tell it's the essence of your blogs and your Wrestling Reverb. So yeah, a perfect place to put a pin in this. What I like to do after that kind of section though, is I like to do a little bit of fun, leave on a high note, do a bit of a word association, where I'll throw some words or phrases at you from the wacky world of professional wrestling, and you just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. How does that sound?
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, no, it quickly became my favorite segment, because when you don't have the time to think about what the word thrown at you is, the truth kind of comes out almost without you even knowing it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
You can now get merch for While We Watch at redbubble.com/people/DAJKirby. Things like stickers, phone cases, and even mugs.
Definitely. So
let's go with the first one. I will go with, what are your opinions on Triple H?
Triple H is one of the all-time, one of the all-time greats. I've always been a Triple H fan. Obviously, I was barely alive for like his work in the Attitude Era, but Triple H in like 06, 07 was one of my favorites. He was such a, when they brought back DX, it was just like the Shawn Michaels Triple H version of DX in 06. But they were so much fun. They were so wacky. And then it inspired me to take a look at his older days and then the original DX. And I'm like, wow, these guys got away with a lot of shit. But I think Triple H is a game changer in the business. I think he's one of the cornerstones of professional wrestling in the WWE. I think he is one of the great champions of this business. And I think he's doing a phenomenal job in his new path as an executive.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I can't fault any of that, what you said. I think he'll always be looked at as almost a secondary champion in my eyes, because he's never been the top dog, if you understand what I mean. He's had multiple title reigns, but he's always been like as part of a group of really big characters around the same time. He's never been the one top guy. But then when you look at his work with NXT, he's the future of the WWE. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the future's bright, man. He's doing great work. I respect everything he's done. I really love, and I love listening to him after the takeovers, and even on like conference calls, you get the recaps from the journalists. Mm-hmm. And I just love picking his brain.
Yeah, and his passion's still there for the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
So next we will go with what do you think of Kazuchika Okada?
Oh my God. Kazuchika Okada is the best wrestler on the planet. He just everything he does, he's athletic, he could tell a story, he could do the flying, he goes to the top rope if he needs to, but he doesn't make it like a crucial part of his repertoire. It's just he does everything right, and he's still relatively young, and he's already like one of the most decorated champions in the history of the business, and he's only got room to grow and to go but up, and especially with like some of the new guys that he's going to be able to work with Ospreay moving to heavyweight, we'll get to see some more of those two clashing hopefully in the future. Their match in the G1 last year was my match of the year. He's had the great matches with Tanahashi, the great matches with Omega, great matches with Naito. Yeah, and if name a wrestler and I can in Japan in the last like 10 years, and Okada's probably had a fantastic match with them. He was, again, we talked about this at length. He was in the main event of the first Wrestle Kingdom I ever watched, and it was the greatest match I've ever seen. So it's hard to live up to that when that's your starting point with my starting point with Okada was that match. But I've since gone back. I watched Wrestle Kingdom 10 with Tanahashi. It was a classic. The matches he's had since have all been really good. And he's got like such a special air about him. Like he feels so important. Every time he steps into the ring for a singles match, it carries an added weight.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, we recorded Badlands earlier. And I think that when he retires, he will be in that conversation for the greatest wrestlers of all time to have his head on that Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I would agree.
But it's just who do you get rid of? that's the hard thing about picking four of the greatest.
I know that's what makes the Mount Rushmore so interesting. It's that you have a finite number. You have to make some hard decisions.
Exactly. So next we will go with what do you think about the influx of women's wrestling?
I'm a big women's wrestling fan. I wasn't always. I was in that group of people who when the Divas would come on in like the 2012, 2011, later in 2011, 2012, I didn't really tune in. When AJ Lee burst onto the scene, I started to pay a little bit more attention. And when she won the belt from Caitlyn, I didn't like Caitlyn, so I was very excited to see AJ Lee win the belt. And obviously she had that great run with it, lost it to Paige the night after WrestleMania 30, which was an oh my God moment. And I was like, and Paige was another one where I was like, holy shit, this girl is different. You know, she's not the carbon copy of a WWE diva. She is in fact quite the opposite. And then we've just been spoiled since then. And obviously the Bellas are polarizing, but they have such an influential role in the development of the divas to women, and now the horsewomen and everyone outside of the horsewomen, there's so many talented female wrestlers out there, not just in WWE, but you look at the Tessa Blanchards, you look at the Britt Bakers and all the women in Japan that are so goddamn talented. Nyla Rose just won the AEW Women's Championship, a great talent. Women's wrestling is incredible. And I'd be remiss without mentioning my favorite NXT match of all time. And one of my favorite matches of all time. This isn't a shock opinion, but it's Bayley and Sasha Banks from NXT Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that match and I didn't really have expectations for it because I that was the first NXT takeover I ever watched. First of all, Brooklyn in 2015, and that was the first like I had watched clips from the last one because the takeover prior to that one had Sasha versus Becky, and that was a great match, very underrated match. But I still was like, that was Sasha and Becky are like, Becky's very technically sound, and Sasha's really good. I don't know what to think about Bayley. I haven't seen Bayley wrestle. The story, the crowd though was into it. The match itself, one of the best matches I've ever seen. When I finished watching it, I knew that I had to watch Takeovers from now on. I didn't even care about the main event after that. Balor and Owens, the ladder match was fine. It was very fine. I didn't give a rat's ass about it. I was so sucked into this women's match, and I just became I was like, I gotta start watching women's wrestling. I gotta start paying this more attention and taking this more seriously, because they are putting on some dynamite work. The next takeover, they went out and they main evented the damn thing, and it was great again. Mm-hmm. And since then we've gotten such a consistent high quality level of women's wrestling that we almost take it for granted now.
Yep. And I think it goes to show just how far women's wrestling has come, that we've controversy aside, we've got the first major promotion to have a woman as their main champion in Impact with Tessa Blanchard. And then you look at the WWE, the biggest company in the wrestling world, and their number one star is a woman. It's Becky Lynch. So yeah, it's just good to see how far they've come, but there's still so much more that they could do.
Yeah, they just main evented WrestleMania. You couldn't have ever predicted that, like as recently as like 3-4 years ago. You're gonna be like, nah, that'll never happen. Mm-hmm. They just main evented WrestleMania and kicked some serious ass doing so. Like, I love that match. Absolutely. And there's nowhere to go but up. It's a cliche, but you know, they have so much more room to do stuff. And with the influx of talent that the WWE brings in, with the NXT women's roster being the most talented group on the planet, just there's so much potential for dream matches and for awesome stories and for great moments. And I just can't wait to see where they go.
Absolutely. So next we will go with, what do you think of the Undisputed Era?
I love me some Undisputed. Really do. These are four guys that, you know, I was aware of when they were on the Indies and when they were in, you know, other promotions. So obviously Adam Cole, I knew him from his Bullet Club shenanigans. Wasn't that familiar with Bobby Fish or Kyle O'Reilly, although I did find out literally last week that a friend of mine from college, she went to school in she lives in upstate New York, and she had Bobby Fish as a substitute teacher in high school.
Wow.
And I was like, well, how the hell did you never tell me this before? Like, it's very documented that I'm a huge wrestling fan. and I found out through a tweet. She tweeted like, my old high school math teacher is dead ass a WWE wrestler now. And I texted her and I was like, who? And she goes, oh, I don't know what his real name is, but his name in school was Mr. Fish. I'm like, you got to be joking me, to steal a line from Billy Kay. You got to be joking me. I'm like, Bobby, your substitute teacher was Bobby Fish, NXT Tag Team Champion. And she's like, I guess. I was like, oh my God, you don't realize how cool that is. But I wasn't that familiar with Fish and O'Reilly or Roderick Strong before they came to NXT. I became a huge fan of all four of them pretty instantly. I think Adam Cole's debut at TakeOver Brooklyn 2 or 3 is maybe my favorite moment in NXT history, because it just signaled, with between him and O'Reilly and Fish, it just signaled the changing of the guard. Mm-hmm. You know, it just something new was coming and you knew it. And fast forward now, and they're the kings of the company. They're the most popular act in NXT.
Possibly in the whole company.
I would. I don't think that's a stretch to say. And they do it with or without gold. We just saw, you know, the Fish and O'Reilly just dropped the tag titles to the Broserweights. Roderick Strong dropped the North American title recently to Keith Lee. It doesn't even matter. They're still hot. Like, they're still awesome. And with or without gold, they still succeed. And they're getting. And the day they come up to the main roster, whenever that happens, if that happens, if they come up together, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. I know they're not everybody's favorite. I know that there's a lot of people out there that think they're, you know, they're small indie guys, but the star power they carry, they possess, when they walk into an arena, people shut up and watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I love faction wrestling in general. I've always been a massive fan of factions. And those are four absolutely amazingly talented wrestlers. I think Roddy Strong could quite possibly being the argument for the best wrestler in the world today. And I don't remember when he last had a bad match. He's just that good.
Oh yeah, even before he joined the Undisputed Era and he was just figuring it out still in NXT, he had a takeover match with Andrade. I forget which takeover it was, but it was so goddamn good. And he had some matches with he was in an 8-man tag teaming up with like Cassius Ohno and I don't even remember who else against Sanity. And just, he was so hot. Like his backbreakers are on point. His knee, his striking is so good, but he really found his home in the Undisputed Era. That was a great move for him.
Yeah, I didn't really, when he first joined, obviously he turned on Pete Dunne and joined the Undisputed Era, and I was like, no, I don't want him in there. It wasn't part of that kind of indie clique that really made me gravitate towards the Undisputed Era. But I'm happy to eat crow on that. I think he was a brilliant addition. His selling for me is the best thing about him. He was recently on the NXT Portland. He didn't even have a match. That's how stacked that card was, that Roddy wasn't actually in a match. But he sold the Willow's Peak from Ciampa, and he hung his legs in the rope and as if he was knocked out. He's just absolutely brilliant selling. Those guys are the DX of this generation, I think.
They're the charisma, the wrestling ability, the moment they walk into an arena, it's such a big moment. Their music is so good, and I just love everything. I don't think I could say a bad thing about those guys.
Absolutely. So the last one I will go with, Kevin, because we've literally been talking for like nearly 3 hours. It's been absolutely amazing. The last one I'm going to go with is, what does wrestling content creation mean to Kevin Carroll?
It's a means of expression. You know, it's a means of communication and artistic expression. And it's been something that, you know, if I didn't find wrestling content creation, I'd probably be a miserable little bitch. in all seriousness though, like I was in a pretty miserable place for a while, and finding a medium to blog and to podcast and to do all these cool things with these cool people, it really brought me out of a year-long funk that I was in. And I'll forever be indebted to the community and to wrestling in general for snapping me out of that. And that's why I think wrestling is like the greatest thing in the world, is because it just connects with people in a way that even like real sports don't. Like it has a way of being there for you and just always getting the job done. You know, it's always there. There's no off season in wrestling, but content creation wise, it's been a way for me to express my feelings, my hurting, my happiness, my everything. The blog has been my everything. It's been so great to have a way to write about wrestling and to write about more than just wrestling. You know, I write about a lot of things. I write about mental health. I write about, you know, sports. I write about music and all sorts of things. I've written about soup. I know we mentioned soup already, but, you know, obviously I have to come back to it because I wrote a whole blog about it. But, I've gotten to write, you know, really serious moving things, and I've gotten to write about Joey Janela blocking me. It's a very wide array of work I've done, but it all means the world to me. It really is just a way for me to get my feelings out there, get my thoughts out there in a way that it's almost judgment free too. That's what I love about the community itself, is that I've never gotten anyone. I've gotten like constructive criticism, but I've never had anyone ever comment on a blog or tweet at me about a podcast and say, that stunk, or you stink, that sucked. No one's ever said that to me. And I've only ever gotten wonderful feedback. You know, people telling me to keep on fighting and to keep on writing and to keep podcasting, and that I'm doing such a great job, and I'm inspiring people to, you know, express, to write about their own histories and their own issues and illnesses, and to be brutally honest with themselves and with others. I think that's incredibly important. I'm proud of myself for for really opening up on, you know, on Twitter and on the blog and on the podcast. I'm proud of myself for putting myself out there and opening myself up to entering this world of content creation, a world that I never thought I'd be in.
Absolutely. And as someone who's has been able to see it from the outside and also kind of from like from behind the curtain almost, it's great to see you have that success. It's more than deserved. You're such a talented writer. You're such a like you said, you're so good at talking. You're such a great foil for the podcast. Yeah, it's good to see you having all this success, and long may it continue. And especially with your move into kind of the wrestling business itself, with the promotion that you're starting to work with.
Yeah, it's been this was like my number one resolution coming into 2020, is I wanted to get more involved with the actual business. I have these great indie shows that are right under my nose that I just never went to before. I just never paid any mind to. There was a show I went to like last month it's like 15 minutes from my house, and I had no clue it was there. And I got to see that match I talked about, that Ace Austin Tony Deppen match. And I got to see a lot of great young, Jordan Oliver is someone that I'll probably talk about forever. I thought he was so goddamn good. And I there are plenty of others, and you know, it would be foolish to try to name them all because there were so many, but they're just a really great, great show. And I took a chance. I'm like, hey, I reached out to this promotion was called True Wrestling, and I reached out to Pennsylvania Premier Wrestling, and I said, if you guys need some website help, or you guys need commentary, or you guys need backstage interviewing, or literally anything, like I've done it before, I have. My one clip of me doing commentary on New York Wrestling Connection show, which was an absolute blast. And I reached out and I took a chance, and then I heard back from the owner of PPW, and he was like, we could use some help. We'd love to bring you on. I'm just getting my feet wet. I've written one match preview. I have another one coming soon. I have yet to get to one of the, I mentioned it before, or I may have mentioned it when we were recording Badlands, but, I was unable to get to PPW's big show this Saturday because of work, but they do have a super show in April that I've marked my calendar. Not going to miss that. I want to be more involved. I want to be in the inner workings, and I want to see how it all goes and how it all works and flows. And I think that's so cool. Like just to be like in that position to be able to do that sort of stuff and to be able to watch it happen from behind the scenes. I'm incredibly lucky.
Yeah, and I'll definitely be checking out that content on YouTube, and I implore everybody to check it out. Go and search it, and there'll certainly be a link in the description for this podcast for you to go and find it. I've loved this, Kevin. Thank you so much. It's been a long, long time in the making, but yeah, I'm glad we finally got this chance to sit down and thrash out your wrestling story.
Yeah, I mean it's a good story. It's a story I love to tell, and I'm glad I finally got the chance to be on both Badlands and Why We Watch, and to hash it out and tell my story, and to talk to you for 3 hours has been it's been a 3 hours well spent.
Thank you very, very much. Let all the listeners of Why Watch know where they can get hold of you on social media, where they can get hold of your blog, where they can find your website, where they can find Wrestling Reverb, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so most prominently you could find me on Twitter at Kevin C Wrestling. That's my wrestling Twitter. All my wrestling tweets are there because I differentiated from my personal account. You could also find the Daily Chinlock at Daily Chinlock. That's the blog I was talking about for other writers. And again, if you're interested, just DM me if you want to write. Or we're all open to anybody. There's literally no rules. You can do whatever the hell you want. You can find Wrestling Reverb on all your podcast applications. New episodes drop every Friday, roughly Thursday night, Friday morning, Eastern time, depending on when Josh feels like it, I guess. You could also find my blog at thelastbloggerstanding.wordpress.com. And that is where my musings are all there. My wrestling writing, my soup writing, my Joey Janela block writing. Fuck Dr. Pepper, by the way.
Don't fuck Dr. Pepper. I love Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, it's garbage, but it's whatever. To each their own, I guess. And yeah, you can find all my stuff there. You know, anything. You know, my mental health history is on there. My writings. That's something I've sort of gone away from, because I largely wrote about that stuff as a way of coping with it. You know, I read about, you know, depression and anxiety and all that sort of stuff. And now that I've rebounded quite nicely, in my opinion, and I'm doing very well now. And it doesn't seem like as pertinent, but at the same time, it's still something I want to continue to explore for the sake of others. I want to help other people with their own struggles and illnesses. That's something that's going to be huge for me for the rest of my life. And you can find all that there on thelastbloggerstanding.wordpress.com.
Yeah, go on, check him out. This guy, honestly, so super talented and so open. A lot of people could learn a lot from Kevin here, even despite his young years. He's got a very level-headed mind, and yeah, I'm so glad that I connected to him through wrestling Twitter, and I count him among my very, very good wrestling friends. So yeah, thank you for coming on the show, Kevin. I really, really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man. It was a blast.
Absolutely not a problem. Anytime. I'm sure we'll revisit for an episode of Why We Still Watch, maybe about a year down the line, if time lands, allow. It'll probably end up being about 5 years down the line. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at DAJ Kirby. You can follow this show at Why We Watch Pod. Another massive thank you to Kevin. I really, really do appreciate it for taking the time to speak to little old me. Thank you guys for listening, and that is the end.
Listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.